Well, I'm just going to dive right in the deep end. It's the news, according to me. Good Thursday morning, November 20th, 9:42 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2025. I am your host, the little barking puppy here this morning. He's been kind of whining and barking. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I'm not sure how this is going to work out. He just walked off. I kind of let go of his collar and let him go walking off into the sunset out there. I don't know what he's going to do. Who knows where he's going to go? He'll probably come back with a Bachelor of Science. I don't know what he's going to do. Turned him loose. If you love something, set it free. If it comes back, it was meant to be. If it doesn't, hunt it down. Well, anyway, you know how the rest of it goes. I had a lot to get into this morning. There's several things going on, some interesting things happening. Elon Musk is reunited. Play that whole song again. We have other things happening. Apparently, there's a lot of Democrats being kind of found out about with the release of the Epstein files, because they had themselves all drummed up about getting Trump on something. Trump played it down, and now they're pushing it. Of course, the Republicans are too. We'll talk about a little bit about whether that's important or not. Then the other thing I want to talk about is just some other things about life in general. We're going to talk about life in general today. There are some things, some interesting things that are just going on. So we'll touch on the topic of what's going on with Marjorie Taylor Greene and MTG, whatever her name is. Wacko that she's become, which I think she's always been. I've never been a real big fan of hers. I just put it that way. And she's proving out to be what I kind of had suspicions about. We'll see how it goes. I had a... what else was I going to talk about? There's those kinds of things. And then there's... Just the general population. There's some violence stuff that's happening in Chicago. Brandon Johnson completely ignoring it. Of course, it's all about social workers now. It's no police, just social workers. You know, which social work is fine, and you know, having counselors and guidance and after school programs, all this stuff, that's just great stuff. But don't get me wrong. However, there's a problem with a particular culture that's starting to get recognized, I think, as for what it is, and I think that they need to address some things. And I think there's a time for police to step in. You just need to have force sometimes to stop things. And there's been some things happening in Chicago that it's just out of control. But I have in my cup chai, creamy chai, Big Train creamy chai with Almond Joy creamer in it. My backup cup is just a cup of ice water, again, much like yesterday. I might actually brew some tea today. I've been drinking plenty of sweet tea. I need to drink more water. But it just doesn't do it for me, you know? It just doesn't. I don't know. But I'm going to probably going to do that again. So anyway, I have, I don't drink like real strong tea, but it does have quite a bit of sugar in it. And I know that that's not necessarily good for you. It is hard on your system, processed sugar. It's not as bad as saccharin and those kinds of things, I think. But it still has, you know, too high of a sugar content just has an effect on your functionality of the way your biome works. So I might have to start cutting back on some of that. But anyway, I have... I got myself in shape. There's something called Canny Cross, which is like a canine cross. I think I might have talked about it before. It's a kind of an obstacle course run type thing that you do with your dog. And in order to you know, do my dog justice because he's quite an athlete. I've got to get myself in shape. So I got to, you know, when he needs to be, well, to be fair to him, he needs to be competitive. I need to get myself in at least decent enough shape that he can kind of, you know, be competitive and have fun. So I'm trying to get myself back into, I've been running and doing a lot of walking, sometimes 6 miles, 6 mile walks. The courses are usually 4 miles long. If I can get my walk down less than 15 minutes per mile, which is, I'm down to 14 right now on a typical walk. And that was the 6 mile walk I did the other day. It was 14 minutes per mile. Now, typically I mess around. If I'm walking the dog, there's always the stopping to pee and stopping to poop and all this stuff that happens along a little walkie walk that we do, 2 mile walk we do usually. But, and I got to start, you know, ramping it up to where we also run together a little bit. It's usually a separate thing. But I want to get to the point where we can do, you know, 2-3 to 4 miles and getting things done in less than an hour. That'd be perfect. And then we have to throw in the, on top of that, you have to do obstacle stuff. I think it's like, I think there's 2 per mile. So 8 different obstacles you have to go through. I think some of the fastest competitors in my age group are about, they're a little less than an hour. So I've got to get that time down there where we can be at least competitive. So there you go. We have, be doing that next year. So I got a little bit of time to start getting myself in shape here. It takes longer when you get to my age. Everything, recovery takes longer. Everything takes longer. Getting out of bed takes longer. Just chewing my food. I only have half the teeth I used to have. It takes longer to chew. Look, I'm down to like 3 chew teeth. Anyway. And those are on my desk here. I chew my food before I put it in my mouth. Anyway, I have a few things I want to play. This is Brandon Lehman had a good exhortation. What's going on in Chicago? The most recent thing. Now this is not the first time these kids have done this. They're apparently called. And he explains this. They're called Wyans. The N stands for, of course, the N word. The Y stands for young N's. That's what they call themselves. They're high school kids up to 13, 14 years old. They started surrounding, there's like 20 or 30 of them started surrounding this one lady walking her little kids home. So their kids were probably 8, 9 years old, eight years old. This mother is walking her kids home from school. She went to pick them up. She was walking them back, and this gang of kids started surrounding her. Ended up surrounding her to the point where they were threatening violence, doing the whole thing. Nobody stops. Nobody sees what's going on. Nobody stops. You know, this went on for quite some time. I'm not going to play the audio of it because it doesn't do you justice to be able to see what's going on. And they're sitting there. They got this woman kind of backed up against a fence, and she's got her little kids, and they're kind of hanging on to her. Well, they just start beating the daylights out of her. And her and her son end up in the hospital. A little girl, I think, was kind of escaped injury, but the mother and the son end up in the hospital, pretty badly affected. I don't know how it ended. I don't know how it stopped. If they just ran off, or if somebody stopped it, I have no idea. My understanding is they kind of left them there, and then somebody came around and helped them. This is not the first time these kids have done this, and apparently this group is actually, there are some gangs in Chicago that actually are scared of these kids because they walk around with guns, they walk around with all kinds of, it's a nasty bunch of kids. And I'm telling you, there's a cultural issue here that has got to be addressed. Now, there's a YouTube channel I watch occasionally. It's called A Righteous Perspective is what it's called. That's the name of the channel. And it's a panel of, I believe they're all black. There's usually 6 people on the panel, four to six people typically on this panel. They'll play a video and discuss what's going on. And they were talking about something similar that happened somewhere. It might have been in New York. It was going on, and they were talking about something similar. And they were talking. They lean more pro Trump, more pro Republican, anti Democrat, for sure. And it's interesting to hear them talk about some of the stuff that's going on. This one lady, she nailed it. I wish I would have had recorded it. It's been a while since I've seen it. It'd take me a while to dig back, you know, find it again. She really nailed it talking about the two different parties. And now it's easy to choose a side and start to say that the other side is evil and one side is righteous and the other side is evil. But she had the scriptures to back it up. She brought up about seven different issues within the Democrat Party. She said she sees the Democrat Party as having a spiritual battle, and the Democrat Party has a spiritual issue. And she went on to list all the things that the Democrats stand for, and just how it goes directly against scripture, and she had the scripture to back it up. She was it was very very interesting. Now the Republican Party, I'm not giving them a break on this. I do agree that most of their platform aligns more with what I would say is more biblical Christianity. However, there are some people who are not necessarily the establishment Republicans. I would say are not necessarily. You know, they'll use it. There are people who have been in the party. This is just like Morning Joe Scarborough. Just when he ran for office, he was a congressman or something. I think he was, and he was Republican. You wouldn't know that to listen to him now. Now, of course, his wife, Mika Brzezinski, she is not. She hates Republicans. As well as Joe now has become this. He kind of likes to use this "I was a Republican once" thing, kind of like Anna Navarro, who's a Republican for like 30 minutes, and never really understood the Republican agenda, platform, anything. She just happened to be Republican. Now I believe the Republicans have an issue. The biggest issue they've got is that they don't educate anyone on what the principles are. They want to be conservatives. They want to just conserve what we have now, and not to be, you know, to maintain the establishment of what the founders intended. You know, in order to do that, you have to educate people on what those things are and why it's important to understand a constitutional representative republic. They don't do that. They don't educate people on the principles of that whole thing at all, and why each individual life matters. When you get down to it's a good example, I think, to hear the BLM movement, the Black Lives Matter movement. Well, only certain Black Lives matter, and they only matter to a certain degree, and it's only for a certain particular political end. And the Democrats and the Republicans do this too, but the Democrats are famous for putting people into groups that they will identify into, rather than defining who you are as you stand where you are. In other words, they want you to join into with the group and comply. This is the difference in the nature of the two. I would say between the difference of what our founders wanted us to do and what the socialist collectivist mentality, I'm just going to call it collectivism, it all kind of lumps under that umbrella. Communism, socialism, Marxism, it's all under the collectivist mentality, that you are a part of this or you are out. And that's in my opinion, that's the definition of fascism. And in my opinion, you have to say the right thing, or we're going to cancel you. That's fascism. If you look up the definition of the word fascism, it says it's a far right political thing, whatever. Fascism, whatever you want to call it, totalitarianism, if you want to call it that, whatever you want to call it, it's authoritarianism, whatever you want to call it. But my opinion, the fascistic idea, is that you will comply with this ideology. You will promote it. You will go along with it. You will become a part of the group. You will conform to this, or you will be out, ostracized, and unable to survive on your own. You're out there on your own at that point. People want to be part of a group. That's what happens with this whole thing. But groups are easy to divide and conquer, because you can use one group against the other. That's where you get your power from. When you have representatives that are representing each individual, it makes it very difficult for the individual themselves, but the representatives themselves should have the power to provide them with that umbrella of protection for themselves as an individual, where they protect their individual rights. Our entire system was set up for this, everything from the Supreme Court all the way down. So I'm not sure exactly how. I know exactly how. Through the public school system, and how that has all worked out. The public school system does not educate our children anymore on what the founding, the founding principles of our nation anymore are. They talk more about social justice, social issues that relate to groups of people, whatever it be, fill in the blank, whether they be racial, gender issues, poverty, poor, whatever it is. They divide people up into these groups and they pit one group against another. And right now, they're using all the groups together to go against a particular party, and yet they don't care. Once they get what they want, which is power, if the Democrats could eliminate the Republican Party, they would start turning on each other. They already started kind of doing that anyway. You can kind of see little snippets of that when they start to argue amongst themselves. They start to cancel each other when the monster starts to eat itself. The Republican Party has disagreements and has its squabbles and issues, and they're having one right now. But they have these kind of things, and it's a disagreement. They work through it, and it's not. Now there are some people in the establishment, and I'm kind of surprised. One of the people I had a lot of respect for a long time was Mark Levin. I have lost a lot of my respect for him in a very short period of time. He was at a conference recently or some kind of a talking thing. I don't know if it was a Turning Point thing or whatever it is. And unfortunately, the general Charlie Kirk mentality of open debate and actually knowing things and speaking balanced message, even though it's not what you're told. You're told he was a Nazi and he was a terrible person. He deserved to die. That's what you're told. That is not the way he was at all. Just play any of his videos where he confronts people very effectively. And that's why he was killed. He was effectively arguing his point, and people just would get enraged with that because they had no way to argue against him. And now you have people who are kind of trying to step into that limelight, people who've been around for years, decades, on TV and radio and doing their little thing, politically involved, who didn't have near the following, didn't have near the movement, didn't have near the effect on our nation that Charlie Kirk was having, what it was growing into. And they're trying to step into that role now. And of course, that's like to people like Tucker Carlson. He's got a very eclectic group of followers. I think he had a chance. I think he had a spot where he could have probably moved forward and really taken a huge share of the listening audience. People like Rush Limbaugh, he stayed in his lane. He had what he did. He knew what he was doing. Knew what he could do, and he was very good at what he did. And he spent his time sharpening that edge, keeping it sharp, moving in that particular genre, very good at it. And he knew it. And he knew the what was being carried, and yet he knew the experience that he had honed the ability and the skills to do that. He could take on just about any caller that, you know, that had at least two brain cells, and he could talk circles around them and speak right to their level. He was very good at that. He'd step right into where they were coming from. He understood the political climate. He understood the political the landscape, if you will. He understood Democrats. The Democrats of today, what is rising up, I think, right now, I think he saw it coming. He could see the handwriting on the wall with all that, knowing that the way they were treating people and the way they were acting and working, I think he saw that coming. You know, that they were going to become more and more radicalized over time, and that the establishment was going to finally fall out. Now Rush was not he was kind of such a unique guy with respect to his ability to understand and work with the establishment, and yet at the same time you could always kind of tell he held off directly firing shots at them because there was this underlying hope that he could kind of steer them along and get them on the right path with regard to conservative issues. He was truly probably the leader of the conservative movement in my lifetime anyway, in understanding what conservatives really are. He had an educational ability. I don't think he even saw himself as an educator, but I think he did that. I think he fulfilled that role in a very profound way. In many ways, I'm not even sure if he realized how much of an educator he was for our nation, and how much he continued to hold things together, because there is a huge gap. There is a large vacuum, if you will, for educating our nation. I think that's one thing Charlie Kirk was able to do. Went on the campuses right to the belly of the beast where kids were getting their crazy ideologies from these universities, and kind of bringing people back to reality and confronting them and challenging them on some of these just ridiculous ideology stuff. And a lot of it had to do with, it's always the same playbook, and it always works. They take these kids, they take the young kids, especially the radicals, they tell them that, fill them with all kinds of utopian ideas of what socialism and communism can be, pit them against the system. Well, systemic, we have systemic problems. And they just continue to work with them on, you know, get them all riled up against it, thinking that they're going to, their way is a better way. We need change, going to resist. And of course, that just feeds right into the whole fascist, Nazi, dictator, oligarchy, you know, no kings. The whole thing gets trumped up with all this stuff because they all get built up into this ideas. These ideas that they're making a difference. We can fight back, push back, and some of them take it too far. It's one thing to have those ideas and to push it out there, but they get frustrated when they can't articulate it, and the next thing you know, the frustration turns into violence. Now, getting back to the whole Chicago thing, we have a culture, and that Brandon Lehman, he's got a podcast, or I should say a YouTube channel that I listen to quite often. I kind of like the guy. I think he starts talking here pretty quickly. I'm going to play this. I'll try to do better than I did yesterday with this whole stuff. But he plays this little rant that he goes on. He does throw some cuss words in here. Because he's kind of talking as the in abstention with you'll get it you'll understand it. So just, you know, excuse, I'm sorry for the cuss words if you have children listening to this, but it's probably, you probably don't, but if you do, you should be aware that there are some not, I wouldn't say, you know, super bad words in here, but just saying. Just, this is talking about the very end of this thing where this all happens. Now he goes into this.
There is a serious problem with black culture. And I'm going to put it right out there on Front Street before other people of equally low moral character start rushing to the defense of these children and say.
Now, keep in mind, this fellow is black. Brandon is black. I think he actually lives in the Chicago area. I'm not positive. But.
Thing. Oh, this isn't a black thing. This is just a bad kid thing. No, these children are being taught and encouraged to be violent and have zero regard for human life. In the black community, there is a term called YNs. And YN stands for young niggas. And the young niggas are notorious for being 13, 14, 15 years old, going to school with automatic Glock handguns with 50-round magazines, or illegal baby AKs they call Dracos with 60-round mags. The YNs are so scary, they're so vicious, they're so dangerous, that OGs in the hood, people who are 40, 50 years old, who were gangbanging back in the 90s, the 80s, the 70s, stay away from the YNs like their lives depend on it. Because it does. The MO of the YN is to be a menace to society. To be as reckless and uncontrollable as possible. To be as violent as possible. To be as murderous as possible. And to be desensitized to the concept of human suffering. They have anointed themselves the title of crash outs, meaning they pride themselves on being so unstable, so inconsiderate, so ready to be activated that the smallest, most insignificant thing can set them off at any time and their response will be to kill things. I say all of that to explain that this behavior we're seeing from elementary school children is the foundation to YN behavior. And any black person who ignores this shit is doing their entire race a huge disservice by disregarding it and pretending it doesn't exist every time the conversation about violence in the black community being a problem is brought up, or calling it racist anytime a white person mentions it. You don't have to be a particular race to objectively look at this and see that there is a major issue. You only see this kind of barbaric behavior coming from the black community because we celebrate it and glorify it.
Now, I want to go on from there. Again, me talking about it as a white man is going to be considered to be it's a racial issue. Now, I've been a fan somewhat, I'd say trepidatiously. I've been a fan of Mark Dice until recently, and I like some of the stuff he has to say. I like some of his research that he's done. However, he's way off and way wrong on some things that he's when he's talking about Israel and talking about some other things. He's just wrong, just flat wrong. And I could go into great detail, and I might maybe next week, maybe in the days ahead, I might actually confront some of the things that he said and kind of put some things together. He does not understand the concept of what Israel is, and most people don't. Most people don't realize that Israel is a name that God changed when he's talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The name Israel is the way the name Israel is referred to as a. He would refer to Jacob and then he would refer to Israel, and they're one of the same person. However, it was depending on the way they were acting, and depending on what God was referring to, whether it was his descendants or. It's a. And God had a covenant with people that is never ending. It's a never ending covenant. It's an everlasting covenant. He never divorced that covenant. He never wrote that covenant off. And yet there are people who believe that Christians are now the new chosen people. And yes and no. We are engrafted into Judaism. And that's. I think that we miss that in the Western culture, that there's been a very anti-Semitic core that has happened within much of what I would call the early Christian church, the Roman Catholic Church primarily. It's very subtle with some popes. It was very blatant. but it lingers on within the Western Christian culture church, in my opinion. It's kind of a, anyway. That's down a whole different bunny trail there. And as like I said, maybe I'll get into that, some of those kinds of things in some of the people who've been, this battle has been going on in the Republican Party and within Christians themselves, with Christendom and what's happening there. Now, what Brandon's talking about here is a cultural issue. And I think this gets at the heart of, you know, where does this all come from? Now, the other day, and I saw this again, I've seen this a couple times where this guy is praying. There's a group of black folks there. I think it might have been a church event of some kind or a public event of some kind. And this group of black folks were kind of lined up in front of these guys, and they were bowing down in front of these black people, and they were asking for forgiveness for the way the white man had treated the black community and the black people, black ancestors. Going on and on and on. And the one thing I never heard throughout this entire process, they sounded very spiritual when they were doing it. I never heard a single black person on behalf of all other black people say they were forgiven. Never heard it. You can apologize all day long to someone. You can ask for forgiveness. Say you're sorry all day long. Every day, 24/7, you can do this. You are repentant with tears in your eyes, being with contrition. This leaves it in the ballpark of the other person. This doesn't solve anything. Doesn't heal anything in the relationship. The other person needs to step forward and say, "You are forgiven. I forgive you." Now, reconcile and move forward. Put this in our past. That is not something you will hear from Al Sharpton or Jeff. By the way, ask Al Sharpton what he really believes about some things. Virgin Mary. Does he? What, you know, what does he believe? Because when you start with some of these people, and Martin Luther King Jr. unfortunately was the same way. There's a guy who wrote a very surprising, alarming, I would say enlightening book about Martin Luther King Jr. and it's just very revealing what he actually believed. The man, I have to say, if this book is true, if the research this guy has done is actual, and I don't know, I mean, he was looked into his previous writings, his things that are on record. There's things that are on record of him, you know, that I was unaware of, that Martin Luther King Jr. said and did, and all the things that he, some of his writings. I was totally unaware that they even existed. I have to say that the man was not a Christian. It's a pretty bold statement, but I don't believe he was actually a believer in Christ, not the biblical Christian that we would consider the fundamental tenets of the gospel. Didn't believe him. That's, you know, pretty important. And I would say that I don't know that Barack Obama could tell you what the main tenets of the gospel are. I'm sure he can't tell you why he's a Christian and not a Muslim. Why did he denounce Islam? Has he denounced Islam and confessed that Jesus is the only way? I don't know that he has said that. Probably not. Now, having said all that, this idea of a cultural issue stems from a lack of understanding of what forgiveness is. I believe it is now upon the black community. I put this on pastors of churches from primarily urban settings, and the racial divide, the racial healing in our nation is not going to happen from white people preaching about anything, in my opinion. It's going to have to come from the black community. The cultural change is going to have to come from the black community. It has been, yes, systemically it has been ruined by certain white people, some of them maybe actually meaning to do well, but in my opinion, I know that they, who was their guy? Lyndon B. Johnson, LBJ. The whole idea of welfare was he's on record as saying it. This will create a perpetual underclass that we will always own. It was just a different kind of plantation. That's what he was saying. We get people hooked on welfare. And of course, the whole, what was the fruit of what happened there? When they started paying mothers, if you are unmarried and you have a child out of wedlock, you get welfare right away. That's where we get the term welfare queen. And people started discovering, hey, if we just don't get married, then I'll get a welfare check. We can live together. I can be your baby mama. And I'll pop out the babies for you, and we'll just live on, I'll get that welfare check. Well, this left people unmarried and uncommitted. And then you have individuals out there who are preaching things and talking about things like you need to populate as many women as you can, have as many babies as you can, so we can increase our numbers. And it's a numbers game over the course of 50, 60 years, 100 years, to increase our population, and so that way we have more power. This is all part of the idea. This comes from a certain ideology that has latched on to the black community. So it's a soup of very bad. So now you have a lot of fatherless children growing up. And yes, a home, a family needs a father. Without one, it is very difficult, to say the least. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm not saying that a child is doomed to that, to having issues. But the odds are definitely against them. But now you have a whole generation. There was actually some interesting studies happening back in the 50s. Black families, black communities actually had a much more stable family life. I think the divorce rate among black families was much less. The late 40s, early 50s. That all changed with the onset of welfare and all these social programs. Changed everything. People will always take the path of least resistance. The easier path, the easier way. When you get them hooked on the dole, but being on the government dole, and that all starts to become a lifestyle, a way that they live. It's just the nature of the way you've trained people up to do things. It becomes that way. And of course, they become so entitled to the point that they know no other way of living. It is an absolutely crazy. It's just an absolutely insane way of trying to create a, and of course that just perpetuates itself onto more and more racism and social, you know, the social construct of everything that's happening. Of course, now you have entire communities growing up with this whole mentality with no fathers in the home. And the whole thing is just a moral soup of but it's just a bad situation. That's what Brandon is talking about here. That there are more and more voices, by the way, on social media coming out talking about this. There's another one, a young lady. I don't know. Where's her thing at here? Maybe I can find it. Don't see it anywhere here. Where are they? This young lady, she's... No, I thought I had a list of my subscriptions, but I don't see it now here. Tinashe Peter is a guy who he's a strong believer. Most of his shows are about an hour long, which I don't always watch all of them, but he's just because they're so long. There's a young lady. I would say she's kind of the. I would say she's even a little bit better than Candace Owens when it comes to. Her commitment to, well, that's interesting. Her commitment to her faith and that kind of thing. She's a little bit more solid on those, some of those things. I don't see her anywhere here now. She's not in my, hasn't put anything out in the last 24 hours. Or otherwise I would see it, but she, it's not there. I don't know. It looks like Tim Pool, maybe. Yeah, Tim Pool and Candace Owens are kind of going after each other. They're over the whole Charlie Kirk thing. Candace Owens has really gone off the deep end, by the way. I've stopped even listening to her just because she's too far out there. But I can't think of this other girl's name. I wish I could find it. I don't have my phone with me. I know it's on my phone. Very easy to find. But anyway, there are more and more black black voices out there who are speaking out. And they're the ones really who have to do that. The white community is not going to be able to talk to people who are, I would say, the brainwashed masses that are out there are not going to be able to, they're going to tune me out. Not going to listen to me for the most part. I think that they are becoming much more aware of the fact that the white liberals in the leftist within the Democrat Party have been, even the black liberals, the people like Brandon Johnson, have been duping them this entire time. I think they're finally starting to figure this out, that it's just not making any sense for them to listen to these people because they're not, Brandon Johnson doesn't care about anybody. He cares about himself. He's got, 110 police officers that keep track of his security all the time. And he didn't want to have police officers for the general community. He just wants to have social workers. It's just an insane way of managing government and protecting people. It is because it's about, the masses are out there, and he doesn't care about them. He doesn't see them as individuals. He doesn't see them as having potential as individuals. He was raised and still is in the whole school system mentality of we're raising little minions that we will have control over. It's just the way it works. Now, and that's the whole point of the Democrat Party. That's where they are with everything that they do. In the meantime, now I've got, seems like there was one other video, Devore Darkins, also a black fellow, a much more of a, I would say, pretty strong Christian faith that he has. He was playing some stuff about Jasmine Crockett, some other things been going on. Now, there's along with all this stuff, this whole thing with the Jeffrey Epstein files, I mentioned that a little bit at the beginning. Apparently the files now that Trump has actually signed the document that has released all the files. Of course, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of heavy redactions and all that stuff that are happening. However, a lot of what's going on as well, on top of all this, is the issue of the fact that the Democrats have kind of stepped in there on their own foot here, because they're going to find out that there's a lot more in there, that Jeffrey Epstein had a lot more to do with Democrats. Now, there's one particular congressional representative, Pratchett or whatever her name was, what was her name, Pritzker, whatever. Whatever her name was. She was actually texting Jeffrey Epstein during a congressional hearing. Now, she claims that he wasn't giving her any advice or telling her what to say, but obviously the texts that they found were at the exact same time she was in this text, in this meeting. They were even talking about things that were going on in the meeting. And he was giving her direct advice, telling her what to say, telling her what to ask, explaining things to her, taking direction from him. You know, they've actually moved to censor her because of it, because of these revelations. Every time the Democrats push on something like this, it's like it snaps back on their own face, because they like to push on it. It's all about projection. And if you can put a mirror in front of someone who's trying to project something, they immediately lose. A lot of this has to do with self-awareness, self-ability to self-reflect. And they have no self-respect, no self-reflection, I should say. No self-awareness, because when they get into this kind of thing, all they're doing is talking out of the emotional side of their mouth, and they just react to everything without any introspection whatsoever. And that is the epitome of, well, just look at Proverbs and everything it says about a person like that. It's one thing to say something and then have a solid view of who you are and understanding of people in general, and then to be able to turn around and just ignore that in your own self. It's like the man who looks in the mirror and walks away and forgets that his hair was, that he's disheveled and he looks hideous. That's in the book of James. Maybe I'll get into that a little bit later. The other thing that's happening is Elon Musk. And I was kind of bothered by, I have a lot of respect for Elon Musk. I also know that he's, because of his, I think he's has an autistic scale. I'm not where he is on the autistic scale. He's on the spectrum somewhere. But he has pretty high up there. He has some issues. And one of the issues, he's a very brilliant guy. He's able to put together teams of people apparently around him, that he's got his inner circle of team must be incredibly incredibly sharp people who are able to work with him. The way he's established some things, it's incredible. And I've talked about this before, that this kind of thing doesn't happen in a vacuum. He's not by himself leading all the pushing the button, making all the rockets launch. But in fact, the other day I was able to watch, I was flying an airplane. I got to watch the launch of a SpaceX satellite from the air. And then about 20 minutes earlier, actually saw Starlink satellites pass overhead. They were still being lit up. There was a dozen of them in each group that they send up. They were all passing over and they were all lit up by the sun. There's no lights on them at all. They were up high enough. It was dark outside, but they were up high enough that the sun was still, it was just after sunset. Sun was shining on them, reflecting down, and you could see that they were all lit up by the sun. They were all in a line, kind of went almost over the top of us. And then about 20 minutes later, we see the launch of a rocket. Pretty amazing. Got to see the booster break off, and then it came back down and landed. Booster came back down. Pretty amazing. It all happened within, I'd say, maybe less than 10 minutes. The thing went up and booster happened, and it came back down and landed. Probably 5 minutes. I didn't even time the thing. Pretty fascinating. Now, all that stuff doesn't happen. Elon probably was, maybe he watches them occasionally, but he's not pushing the button on every single one of those. He's got a team of people around him. He's got an incredible, group of people that are working in all the aspects of it, his management, managing all this stuff. Now, at the same time, I was a little bit disappointed that he couldn't get along with Trump. Now, I understand they're both very type A type people, I assumed. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a psychologist. I don't have the ability to tell you what kind of personality types each of them have. Very strong personality types. And, there's major clashes there. They apparently have buried the hatchet. They're back together again. And Ilan has, rather than starting his own party, has stepped back in and basically said he's coming in with his pocketbook wide open to help with the 2026 elections. And they had dinner at the White House the other day. Ilan was there, and they're kind of back again together. And it'd be interesting to see what comes of this now. Of course, the Democrats now are just shaking their boots. Again, they're going to probably start saying, oh, he's an oligarch, no kings, no, you know, whatever. So it'll be interesting to see how this all pans out with what's happening between him and Ilan. I think Ilan finally has realized, you know, the mature thing to do is, you know, to try to work together on some outcomes that are good for our country, good for our nation, set aside some personal stuff. So I think hopefully that's what's happened. I don't know. We'll find out. But the whole thing is, a lot of it has to do with this issue of self-awareness and self, you know, introspect and everything else that goes on. It changes who you are. Makes your skin much thicker, because there's no, you don't, it doesn't bother you if people laugh at you. Because it enables you to laugh at yourself. It enables you to kind of not take yourself so seriously and realize in the bigger frame of things, you know, the 8 billion people on this planet, how small your life really is. I heard something the other day, in 100 years from now, everybody who knows you will be dead. Most people will not remember you on this earth. Very, very few people are remembered for longer than 50 years. Very, very, very few people have statues of themselves anywhere. Or even, in this day of digital preservation, we have much more, I would say we'll have maybe photos of people around for a while. But even then, most people will drift, go to a cemetery sometime, just walk around. That sounds like a morbid thing to do, but just those people all had lives. They had, at the time, they thought they were very important. I'm sure certain things embarrassed them. Certain things gave them joy. Certain things gave them sadness. They had struggles in their life. They may have, all those people lived the life of, struggle. It was just, they lived through the struggle of life. And almost to the point where they might have thought that they were the only ones who had ever faced such a thing before in their lives. And yet, none of those things matter. Those things are temporal. There are things that are eternal. My wife and I are trying to set up some things that will outlive us by far for a long time. But eventually, even if it, putting together a trust, putting together a foundation, doing some things like that will help people for years, we're hoping to be able to do those kinds of things. Now, theoretically, we could potentially, I could potentially live another 30 years. Hopefully being productive in all those, or most of those, 20, even just 20 years. Into my 80s, hopefully I can be productive. My dad was, my grandpa was. And by the end of that time, hopefully have developed and put together an organization that can live on long after we're gone and be able to affect, situation with scholarships, whatever it is that we're going to be doing. And it's one of those things where it's, even then, if it lasts 100 years, it's only 100 years, and it's gone. And people who receive those scholarships won't know who we were, will never have any idea who we, anything about us. And it's okay. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. I, but it matters to them. And I guess, you know, having an understanding of who we are, the more honest you can be with yourself, it's actually kind of a dangerous thing to do. On one hand, you realize how significant your life is. On the other hand, you realize how insignificant your life is. It is a weird balance of things. You realize how selfish you are as a human being, regardless of how unselfish and things you try to do to help others. You are an incredibly selfish person. Self-preservation didn't happen until the fall. And then all of a sudden, it was there. But I digress. I have, this is Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. I will have a show tomorrow morning, hopefully, if nothing's too crazy. My wife will not be here tomorrow morning. So I will be on my own to figure out the animal situation. So hopefully they don't give me too much grief. In the meantime, we will be, just watching what happens with the world out there. Folks, let me know what you think about what I think. I'm always interested in opposing or agreeing, whatever you oppose, agree, whatever it is. We'll just have a discussion about it. Change my mind. You can call or text the show, 812-379-8778. Let me know what you think about what I think. In the meantime, God bless. Have a great rest of your week, which is only one more day. I'll not be around on Saturday. Take care, and I'll see you.